Welcome back to Feet First, a podcast focusing on the front of the pack in the UK trail and ultra running scene, bringing you another update in our arc of attrition coverage this week. This is a double bill episode featuring two conversations with our first North American guests on the podcast. Well, that's not strictly true. We did speak to John Kelly way back when the podcast started, but these episodes were conducted in person with Joe Miller and Sabrina Stanley ahead of the Arc of Attrition 100 miler. Kicking off with Joe. Joe is based on the east coast of the USA and he's had some success in a number of ultramarathons there. I wanted to speak to Joe because he clearly has an interest in the UK running scene. He came over to the UK last spring to take on UTS, the 100 miler there, where he unfortunately DNF'd at mile 90, but clearly he's caught the bug for British ultra running and he returned this year to run the Arc of Attrition. He had a good first half of the race, running up in the top 10, ultimately finishing a bit further down the ranks, but it was really interesting to get his perspective on the British trail running scene and get an understanding of why this race has an appeal to a North American athlete. After that, we spoke to Sabrina Stanley. Sabrina needs no introduction. She is one of the most dominant US ultra runners of the past 10 years. She's had some incredible results at races like Hard Rock and Western States, but in recent years, she's had a bit of a cancer scare that has meant that she's not been racing for about 18 months or so. So this was actually her first race back, and it was really interesting to get her perspective on why she chose this race and what she was hoping for going into the race. She ultimately finished in fourth, which I think is an incredible result at an extremely difficult race where, you know, weather was a huge issue, and massive kudos to her for having such a solid return to running. I do have to admit that I was quite nervous ahead of these interviews. These were some of the first live streams of the day that we did, and not used to interviewing, you know, North American athletes. And so I do think that shows a little bit, particularly in the Sabrina interview. So hopefully forgive me if any questions come across as a bit strange, but I've decided to leave them in unedited because, you know, the show is all about authenticity. So I hope you enjoy nonetheless, and a massive thank you to Joe and Sabrina for being such gracious guests and for heading down to the Feet First Cottage ahead of their races. As ever, if you enjoy the show, please do leave a rating wherever you're listening. It really helps the show get noticed. And make sure you head to the socials at Run Feet First on Instagram or Feet First on Facebook to follow the podcast for updates. Just before we begin, I want to thank Janji for their continued support of the podcast. I've said it before, but this kind of coverage, heading down to Cornwall, hosting some live streams, it literally wouldn't be possible without the investment of partners like Janji, who make incredible running apparel that is beautifully designed and really comfortable to wear. I was pretty much living in my Janji fleece all the time I was in Cornwall. If you want to check out Janji, then head to janji.com. That's J-A-N-J-I. And whilst you're there, if anything takes your fancy, you can use the code FEETFIRST, all one word, to get 15% off your order. Not only will that mean you can stock out your running wardrobe with all kinds of awesome goodies, but it will really help support the show and help us continue to invest in coverage of the UK scene over the course of the next year. That's janji.com and use the code FEETFIRST. All right, here we go. Here is the first conversation with Joe Miller. Welcome everyone back to the live stream. It's been a short break, but we're back with Joe Miller. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you, our first ever American guest.
I'm honored.
Yeah, representing the States.
Yeah.
Here in Cornwall. I guess it's always good when someone's on the show for the first time to just get a sense of who they are. Sorry, I'm just going to mute that. It's always good when someone's on the show for the first time just to get a sense of who they are and sure. Where they're from and what they do. So could you tell us a bit about you and where can you be found running day to day?
Yeah, so I live in Berlin, New Hampshire. It's up in the White Mountain National Forest, just like a little north of Mount Washington, which is the biggest peak in our area. And I moved there a couple of years ago and I, you know, train there and live there and with my wife, Valerie, our two dogs. Do a little skiing, just started skiing, gravel biking, mountain biking, try to do, a little bit of everything. There's not enough time. Yeah. I do have a job, outside of running, so that keeps me quite busy. So that's pretty much it.
It feels like, the West Coast gets a lot of attention in trail running talk and the Rockies in general. But it feels like the East Coast potentially has a lot more in common with the UK. Is that accurate, do you think, in terms of the terrain?
Yeah, I think there's like, I don't know, maybe because we like kind of share the same like mountain range, like going back hundreds of millions of years.
Right? Yeah, it's like the Scottish Highlands.
And, totally. So it's like a similar like terrain and mentality. And yeah, I think there's also in the White Mountains a bit of a long history of like mountain efforts or mountain running, you know, going back to like the 1950s and the Appalachia Mountain Club. Like there's a lot of like very prominent alumni of the Appalachian Mountain Club, you know, like Katie Scheid and Jeff Colt and Hillary Jardy and all these others that are like pretty big in the mountain running scene. So I think there's like a lot of pride in the White Mountains, not to take anything away from the West Coast. I've run out there. It's great, you know, but I think there are a lot of very stellar athletes and a lot of athletes that like don't race a lot of things that are like, if you put them in a race, they would, you know, probably podium.
Right.
You know, they're just athletes, four season athletes out there doing schemo or whatever.
Right, yeah. So very European in that sense. Like in the Alps, you get people who ski in the winter and then run in the summer.
Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, Tuckerman Ravine on Mount Washington was kind of like the original birthplace of ski mountaineering in North America or America. So, you know, I think there is that like, it's kind of part of the reason I moved there to learn that discipline because I've never skied before last year. Yeah. So it was kind of just like, you know, last year I started skiing and I'm not actually skiing in Tuckerman Ravine yet, you know, but one day, you know, one can dream. Nice. So,
I know you took part in UTS, was it last year?
Yeah.
And I know you had a tough time with that race, but I wanted to sort of get a sense of your experience there. Was that your first time on British soil running?
Yeah, that was the first time. I chose the race because I thought the similarities between the White Mountains, it's very technical and, you know, a lot of on trail time, and it lived up to what I thought it was. I just, I wasn't exactly prepared for the heat.
Yeah, with hot wet. Yeah.
And like, I just have like a high sweat rate. So I was drinking a lot. I had to carry a lot of water and then drink a lot of water. And I think that just like broke me over like, I think around like 75, I was pretty much toast. But I continued on to 90 and I ended up dropping it at mile 90. So it was the first DNF in 100. So that was a experience, you know.
Right. And is that related to your decision to come back to the UK to do this race, or is that separate?
No, I think, you know, just reading about this race and like looking at the times, and it's just like the challenge of the weather and the night.
Yeah.
Like the long, long night. I really like that idea of just running through the night for that long, for 15 plus hours.
Yeah.
And, you know, just I knew that Snowdonia was technical, and I imagine that this is going to be much. Like some of the trails are going to be quite technical too. And those are what, I'm not, I like the more technical, terrain than, you know, just towpath.
Yeah. So. It's interesting. Cause like this race is very iconic in the UK and a lot of people know about the race, but this will be the first year, where we've had a real presence of international athletes. It was a UTMB event last year, but that was kind of a new thing.
Sure.
And it's just a strange thought to think, someone from the US with all your incredible scenery that you have on your doorstep would come to Cornwall. I mean, what is the draw, I guess? I mean, is there an equivalent, is there a UTMB event in the East Coast that you can go and do?
I did Grindstone 100
Grindstone,
mile. Yeah. So I did that in 2023 and it, I ended up, that's how I got direct entry into UTMB in 2024. I got third place there and, yeah, it was a great event. You know, I think there was some, that was the first year the UTMB race took over that. I just don't think that that's as similar because a lot, it's just not as, the terrain isn't as technical as a lot of like link up of gravel, a lot more like pure running. And so, yeah, I think that's the only race on the East Coast that's a UTMB race. And honestly, like for East Coast people, I think it's much easier to just come to Europe.
Yeah.
That I mean, like it's almost easier to come to Europe than to come to like Washington State or like California. Like, I mean, you know, like my wife and I, we flew over to London and then just took like a 5-hour train and we're here.
Yeah.
You know, it was like 10 hours of travel. So it's somewhat convenient, I guess, for like a large international race. And, you know, I think experiencing like the local culture, like the Cornish culture and like reading about the area, you know, I really enjoyed the time in Wales. Yeah, I think that's a draw. We've been trying to make like vacations out of these races. So, it's been great.
The last couple of years of the arc have been kind of characterized by pretty cold but pretty dry, like runner-friendly conditions. Sure. You know, Tom Evans finishing the race in shorts and t-shirt. It's looking like after some cold years, we're gonna get a more mild, rainy year. You know, it's been very wet all week. How does that affect your kind of mental game, I guess, going into this race?
Yeah, it's interesting. It training in the White Mountains for a running event, you know, in January, and it was similar to Snowdonia. All the technical terrain was covered, you know, by a few feet of snow.
Right.
And so like there isn't a lot of the stabilizer muscle engagement that you would get. So it's a lot of like treadmill running and Nordic skiing and biking. And so like the preparation isn't like it's as specific as it can be. Mm-hmm. Right. But like you're not getting like on the terrain because like a lot of it was just like snowy road runs in like 5 degree temperatures, which is like, I guess I don't know the conversion, 5 Fahrenheit, but like,
yeah,
significantly below freezing.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so like, it's, yeah, it was just way much different. So like the layering is different. Yeah. So I don't know. I always like the challenge of trying to, like, you know, do the specific work that you need to do to perform well at the race, but also like in the same environment that like that I'm in, right. That I live in. So it will be a challenge to see, cause it's going to feel kind of like almost like spring or summer, you know, to me.
Yes. It gets very cold where you live.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's regularly below zero. So I don't know. I look forward to like the rain and, you know, pretty good at changing of, you know, the transitions to different attire. So yeah, I think it will hopefully suit me quite well. I mean, I like running in adverse weather, so.
I know you only got here last night, but have you had a chance to recce any of the?
No.
Any of the route?
No, I mean, watch some videos on the bike trainer, watched a number of videos. I listened to a lot of your podcasts. So yeah, no, I it'll be all new to me, and I kind of like it that way.
Right.
You know, it's more like kind of like on-siting it, you know, for the first time.
It feels like this is a race where that may be an advantage or a useful strategy because it is so varied. You know, it breaks down into so many different sections that there's no one style of running that maybe is gonna play well on the course.
The point from like Land's End basically to like St. Ives, like I'm personally looking forward to that because it seems like a very challenging section.
That's
and it's
the one
done
everyone talks about, isn't it?
But it's also like that time period, like if you hit it and you're like doing decently well, you're going to hit it like kind of at those dark hours, you know, from like two to five or so. And so you're going to, it seems very, very fun. That idea of hitting that in the dark, you're tired, you know, maybe you just started your caffeine or whatever. And, you know, the race is kind of just starting there, you know, so that's like appealing. I think.
Just a quick shout out to the live stream. If you've got a question for Joe, do pop it in the chat. We are monitoring those questions so we can fling those to him. One thing I was curious about is like how conscious are you or is the US generally of the UK trail running scene? What races float to the surface? What races get attention, if any? Are there athletes as well that sort of people are aware of? Because it is still, I think, a North American dominated sport in a good way. Like that's where the big iconic hundreds are, with the exception of UTMB.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're aware. I don't know, like, you know, there's so many, like, I'm sure iconic, like, fell running events, right, throughout the UK. Sure. And I don't think, like, anybody's too dialed into that necessarily. I mean, but I think, like, the bigger names, like Jasmine Paris, like, with the Barclay Marathons and Tom Evans and, you know, Finley Wilde. I mean, so, you know, these people and, like, historically a lot of the NOV, like people, you know, so the FKTs, I think are very, at least from my perspective, like I follow those, you know, somewhat closely, like the Bob Grand Round you know, the different rounds, those are just interesting to me. So, you know, I think it's like, there's an awareness, it's growing, but, I think getting, you know, the UTMB kind of like probably brought some awareness to it. I mean, I try to do a UTMB race a year because once I got into UTMB through the direct entry, it was kind of like, I raced my way in. Can I do that again?
Right.
Yeah. And then so like trying to see if I can actually do that again.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm not like, I don't get paid to do this. So, you know, it was just it was nice that I got third, and let's see if the training pays off again. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, but, I think the UK has, you know, the Lakeland 100.
Yeah.
Like that looks like a phenomenal race. I got my eyes on that at some point, you know, but you got so many different FKT routes too, like just to go spend time in the Lake District for 2 weeks sounds appealing to me.
Yeah, for sure. You know? I mean, is this a one-stop trip for you coming to Cornwall, or are you going somewhere else?
Yeah, no, I think we're just, here. Yeah, for a couple of days, and that's probably nice.
And how much research have you been doing on your competition at this race? Are there names you're concerned about?
I try to like run my own race. I mean, I just know that there's like a lot of strong like guys at the top of this race that, you know, have raced all over Europe, all over the world, honestly, and done quite well in a lot of places and in varying age groups, you know, like, cause you got to always like think of, I'm always more worried about like those like 40 plus age group guys. Cause like they have so much experience.
Yeah.
You just don't know. Like, you know,
it feels like this is a race that plays to their strengths in a sense. Cause you can't win it by just being really, really fast.
Yeah. Or I mean, maybe, right. Like, well, I don't know, you know, like maybe you get lucky, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it's always interesting just looking at the age and just the experience levels of the people. And I know that there's really strong UK runners here. And so, it will be interesting. I just like try not to get too caught up in, like running with anyone or like, I've done a couple races. I did, in 2022, I did Cruel Jewel down in, the Southeastern United States.
Right.
You know, I ran from the front and the entire race, and I was alone. And it's really hard to like push yourself, like at the end of a race like that when you're like, you know, just like falling apart. But like you still gotta push, but no one's there to like, push you. So, you know, I think hanging back a little bit, just like getting a feel for, you know, the terrain, the route, the people that you're around, you know. And like I said, I don't even think the race is gonna begin until probably around like 100K.
Yeah,
I'm at the earliest.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's cool. One thing I was curious about, I read your Instagram post after UTS. I'll just read a quote from it. I wanted to feel completely and utterly overwhelmed. The feeling I was chasing and having sought in most 100-mile races is actually a number of emotions: anxiety, calmness, fearfulness, boldness, uncertainty, certainty, confidence, lack of confidence, fullness, emptiness, hope, cynicism, happiness, sadness, confusion, and clarity. Basically, I wanted to feel everything deeply and experience a change in myself. This has typically occurred in my past experiences with 100-mile distance at Snowdonia. It only took 90 miles for that to be profoundly felt. Great bit of writing.
Thanks.
It's lovely. But clearly you're someone who thinks deeply about this sport and feels it at a level that maybe is beyond just pure performance. So what do you think is, as you move forwards and sort of progress, what's fueling or motivating that desire to be trying these different races and picking these particularly quite difficult races, I think it's fair to say, rather than showing up to, as you were talking about, like Cruel Jewel and just taking the win, you know?
Yeah. Well, I would say the Cruel Jewel is a tough course, but yeah.
It's sort of seeking that edge competitively.
Yeah. No. I think like, having those, moments like, when I knew that I was done at Snowdonia, I had, you know, gotten to the top of Snowdon and I was on the shoulder of it and I just sat on this rock and I wept for like 2 minutes, like uncontrollably. And then like I called my wife and she was like, she basically told me I shouldn't quit. And I was like, no, I'm done. And I got up and I like ended up just like walking down Snowdon and it was like so beautiful, right? And it was like so great. And it took me a very long time to get down, but it was just, you know, I tried really hard for 75, 80 miles and it just wasn't my day. And like, I hadn't had a day like that. And, but I had experienced all of those things. And so it's like, you just gotta like, you know, walk away and be content with it. So I think finding I'm just curious about how I respond to different like elements, right? Like the rain here, the night, like, I just want to know, like, you know, I haven't experienced a long duration of a night like that. So like seeking out experiences that will like, you know, kind of upset the status quo. Right.
Yeah.
And fitting that into my like lifestyle, like living and, you know, and where I live and still being able to do some of the things that I want to do there, which the White Mountains, like, you know, it is so technical and vert heavy that it forces you to do more 15 to 20 minute pace is like, you know, a pretty solid pace. Yeah. There, right. Yeah. And so it's like speed hiking, yeah, but you know, that doesn't like probably bode well for someone who wants to like go race, you know, Javelina.
Yeah.
Right. So like, I think going more to the mountains, and staying in more mountainous terrain is kind of like what appeals to me. And the more technical, the better.
Right. Sounds like you should move to the UK. Oh, you live in the East Coast.
So. Yeah.
I mean, are there races on your radar that kind of feel like they would scratch that itch for you here or in America?
Yeah. I mean, I did a route called the White Mountain 100.
Yeah. I've heard about this.
Yeah. So it was in September, and it was like a fat ass style event. So kind of unorganized, because it's on the Appalachian Trail. It's 100 miles. It has like 35K of vert. Yeah. So it's just an iconic route, and you know, a lot of people hadn't run it. You know, Jack Kunzel ran it.
Yeah.
And he set the FKT in like 26 hours, and Kara Baskin just recently set the female FKT for 34 hours. You know, it's just an iconic route. It's like 15 minutes from my house.
Wow.
So it's like this world-class like 100-mile route. Yeah. And you know, so I think honestly, like, that's going to be like a route that I'm just going to keep going back to and try again and again. I did it in September, and I ended up going the week before the Grand Depart when everyone else was going, and I had some sodium issues, and I ended up dropping at mile 52, and then 7 or 8 days later, I went back and tried the route again, mm-hmm. And ended up finishing in 32 hours.
Pretty good then.
Yeah. The anterior tibialis kind of just like gave up though the last 30 miles. But, other than that, you know, yeah. It's kind of just like the moving of the foot didn't really work anymore, after, you know, but you know, what are you going to do? But yeah, no, like, so that route is something I think I'll keep going back to. But yeah, you know, like, there are races, Ultra Trail Cape Town, is like an interesting one. Yeah. And I mean, UTMB has a draw, but, I think like others, like, you know, I Hard Rock, you know, remains something, but it's almost getting, like a little bit too tedious to like, you know, like wait in the lottery for some of these races. So like, and when there are so many routes, and not even races, but routes that are out there that you can, you know, like, you know, the Wonderland Trail or like the Wind River High Route.
Still probably one of my favorite documentaries is Gary Robbins doing the Wonderland Trail.
Yeah.
It's and like 10 years ago now. Probably.
Totally. Yeah. And it's such an iconic route. And yeah, there's so many like obscure, just like, you know, routes out there, like the Norman's 13 and, you know, like that has an appeal. And so, yeah, I it's hard to like say that just like, you know, I like racing because I like the competition. I feed off of like other people, and you know, it's and experiencing like what this race means to other people, like seeing how much people care. You know, like the Archangels, like that whole thing. Like I didn't, you know, like I like experiencing that and like how much people care about their regions and their areas. I feel like that's where there's a similarity with like, you know, the White Mountains and the UK running culture is they have like this fondness for their like local mountain, local hill.
Yeah. So. Yeah, there's a really good, we were talking about before about Ricky Gates, who's like my hero, but there's a really good documentary of Ricky Gates and maybe someone else when he was with Salomon, and they come to the Lake District and they do sort of, I think they do a fell race. I don't think they do a Bob Graham, but they get involved in the scene. Mm-hmm. And I think Ricky Gates at one point, he says something about how, you know, he's someone who's traveled the world and he's raced all over the world, but he says like maybe one mountain range is enough for a lifetime or something. This idea of like embedding yourself deeply within a landscape. Which it feels like the East Coast, from the little I've heard about the White Mountains, like people do, they do kind of stay there. They do kind of like, it's not a place where everyone's training there, but then being like, I want to go and run Western States or I want to go and run hard. It's like, we've got it here almost.
Yeah.
But it's kind of self-contained in a way, a bit like Lake District running. It's like,
yeah,
it's not opposed to outsiders, but it's like, it's kind of self-contained in a way. It's
yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, there are 48 peaks above 4,000 feet. And so, you know, like that, and there's a, you know, the self-propelled, a friend of mine, Andrew Drummond, has the FKT on that.
I listened to that. It's like a long effort, right?
Yeah. It's like 180, 190 miles with like 80,000 feet of vert. So, you know, and yeah. you know,
no one's ever thought we should put a race on this.
Yeah, well, I don't think it would get permitted in America because
it's very
the
different, isn't it?
Yeah. So like, and that's why like the White Mountain 100, it's like everyone just signs up and it's like no one's making any money. It's not a race. We're just all agreeing to meet at 6 a.m.
Yeah.
to run this route, and then at 4 points you'll get, you know, food and water.
Right.
But so it's like, yeah, I think. Though there's so many of those things in the White Mountains, like so many different challenges, like the hiking community is very strong. Like, so like runners, like historically have like seen like, you know, it's kind of like a snow leopard in the White Mountains, like for the longest time seeing a runner there. Cause like everyone is like, you know, it's like hiking, right? Yeah. Is the thing that people do there. And so when you're running, people are like, wait, you're running here, you know? So like it's become much more commonplace than it was, I bet like 15 years ago. But yeah, it's not known for like the trail running, really it's known for the hiking. And so, you know, there is just a long culture of hiking and there's so many routes, so many backcountry skiing routes. There's excellent ice climbing, rock climbing, you know? So like, yeah, you could probably never leave and have a very good life, you know, in the White Mountains, honestly, exploring all, there's so many different zones and, you know, and there's like a lot of alpine terrain where there's like no trees above tree line. So like above 5,000 feet. Yeah, so I think it's a great place. You should come visit.
Yeah, I mean, one of my questions was going to be, I feel like you kind of answered it, but what's a trail or a race that, if I was going to fly to New Hampshire and do a race, what would it be? Sounds like it's not actually a race, but the White Mountains 100.
Yeah, the White Mountain 100, I mean, it's in September. You know, the difficulty there is, like, the terrain is so specific. You know, it's like... It's hard for like outsiders to like really flourish there.
I think that's what people like about the Lake District though, is like, like Jeff Pelletier came over and did a Bob Graham and made a brilliant film about it, but he spent a month just doing the recces and stuff. Partly because it's like culturally, that's just kind of what you do. Like Jack Quensley was a bit of an exception, although I think he did camp out and recce a lot of it. But also because you just need to understand how that terrain works, and similar to the White Mountains.
Yeah, it's just like getting the all those little stabilizers or muscles that you're not going to get. But but there's a couple people from out west that have come and finished the White Mountain 100 and, you know, done fine, done well. So, you know, I'm not saying it's like impossible or anything. It's just it is a specific terrain, and there isn't like, there isn't like 10 pavement miles anywhere, you know, like, so like, we're not going to have any, like it's on trail. You're
there's
on
no
the Appalachian
California
trail.
Carpet. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's like one section where it's like kind, it's runnable, you know, for like 3 or 4 miles. But like, other than that, it's, you know, 20, 30% climbs.
And,
So yeah, I mean, I think that, but there's also like, the Presidential Traverse, the Pemmy Loop, the Mahoosic Traverse, that's an iconic one. It's 29 miles and 11,000 feet of climbing.
Right.
So like those are all like in that area.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not races, but you know.
I think I saw, obviously it's a different part of the East Coast, but I saw Lazarus Lake talking about the origin of the Barkley, and he was talking about how he was seeing in like a Trail Runner magazine or whatever, people posting trail marathon times that he just couldn't believe. Like, he couldn't understand how they were running these times, because his idea of a trail was what he would, not what he would refer to, what we call trails as paths. Trails are like, you link up some sort of a log and then a tree up there and you find a way to get to them and stuff, which is like, it sounds like that's potentially more what the East Coast trails can be like.
I think so. I think like,
and I think that sounds like they'll place your strengths at the arc. Because a lot of the idea, a lot of the arc, when people come along, particularly the early miles and the bits around Land's End, they'll be a bit like, this is where we're going. Like, we've got to go up this and then around there and, you know, follow that.
Yeah, no, that's appealing. Like, it there was in Snowdonia, like, there was, the flagging was like excellent, but like, there was sections when it was like, hold on, like, where's the path?
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, no, you just go, you know, like,
and that's a mass participation event. Like, a lot of the fell and skyrunning events, it's like, what?
Yeah, you just choose your own adventure. Yeah. And that's, you know, in the White Mountains, there's like, you can't go off of the path because of the fragile alpine environment for the ecosystem. Yes. So like, there isn't that like freedom to roam technically really, but like, it is, I do like the so I'm looking forward to ARC and the whole, and also like some of the climbs, they do look like, you know, average 15-20%, even though they're short, there it's a lot of like, you know, like more muscular endurance type, you know, things. And
I think from what I've heard, and I haven't run this race, a big challenge is the climbs are short to the point where you think, well, I should run this because it's going to be over in, you know, a few minutes.
Yeah.
But then by the time you've recovered, you've got another one.
Yeah.
And they just keep kind of punching you in the face like that. You
know? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little jabs rather than a big alpine climb.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with the mandatory gear, you know, that's going to wear you out over time. And yeah, that, you know, the mandatory gear is interesting because like I run in complicated terrain and environment. And sometimes like I'm not running in with as much gear as I'm wearing for UTMB races.
Sure.
You know, and I'm in, I would argue, say like sometimes worse conditions, right?
Sure.
But I still feel safe and I have enough equipment. But so it is an interesting thing. Like, and I did it a couple of treadmill runs where I found out that I was about 0.3 miles per hour slower on the treadmill with the mandatory gear than,
right.
Yeah. So like it was interesting to know like what my pacing will be at, you know? So I found that to be like somewhat helpful to know like, okay, like I might be pushing the pace when I think I'm not, you know, because of the gear and, you know, so.
And if you're looking at your watch, you think I should be running whatever pace, but I can't, it's, you got a lot of stuff in your back.
Yeah. So it's just a good reminder to, you know, acknowledge the gear and to know that like, you know, some of the paces that you run without anything on, you know, do not need to be ran,
Totally.
Yeah.
It feels like the US is a couple of years, maybe even 5 or 10 years ahead of the UK in terms of professionalization in the sport. And I feel like you're in an interesting band there because I know you're not a professional athlete, you're not a sponsored athlete, but you're competing at a level where, you know, you're potentially at UTMB World Series events, you could be looking at podiums and things. So in terms of your own personal trajectory, and when you look at the sport in the US as well, like, where do you see that heading for you? Where are you hoping to take this? Are you more interested in just the experiences and the adventure, or are you thinking, I want to get on this train?
Yeah, I don't think that, you know, I like my lifestyle as it is, right? Like, you know, I get to, you know, run and do these events and, you know, and I make it work. And, you know, I mean, if I started like winning, you know, races regularly or something, like, you know, maybe that's a different conversation, but it's also, you know, I feel like there is this, full commitment to, you know, training and the lifestyle. And like, I don't think that I could do it, with the job that I have. Right. You know, I would definitely need to like spend more time because, I think my trajectory is, you know, I've been running since 2011, right? So like, it's a long period, right? Yeah. And like, this is like, you know, like where I've gotten myself, and
you
it's
look
quite
younger. I didn't, that surprised me.
Yeah. So like, it's been quite good, but like, you know, I just think, you know, to get, you know, that's a lot of work, a lot of hours. And so, you know, to get to that next level, I think, you know, would probably require a little bit like bigger efforts, longer recovery for me. And so like, or maybe not, I don't know. But
it's also changed so much even in the last few years, right? Like I feel like that pointy end is getting pointier.
Totally.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't know. It would be interesting. I haven't really thought about it that much. What I'm doing, like I'm happy it works, you know? Yeah. So like, I don't know. The pointy end is getting pointier for sure. And, you know, there's also like, some of the races that sponsors want, I'm not saying there's too much pressure because I'm not a sponsor athlete. I don't know for sure, like if people are getting pressured to do races, but like, you know, Western States is cool. And if I got into Western States through a lottery, like I would do it, but it's not like my end all be all. You know, like I definitely like these more mountain specific efforts. And so, you know, I think that's kind of where like, you know, they want you to do Western States or Hard Rock, you know, or UTMB, but so I don't know. It would be interesting. I would see what happens if that opportunity came up, you know.
It would be cool if other race names were regularly thrown about. Like I do feel like Western States UTMB is almost, it's almost one word now.
Yeah.
Like on podcasts, it's like Western States UTMB.
I mean, they are sponsored, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, where do you stand on that? I mean, I guess you're not sponsored, so, you know, you can kind of choose your races, but that the risk of monopolization in the sport is something we're seeing, I think, now on a global level. And actually Western States really does stick out as a sort of exception to that rule, where the way they've managed to hold on, I know they're sort of in bed with UTMB in a sense, but they've managed to hold on to their independence. Do you see that? Just how do you feel about that? I mean, you've come, presumably you wouldn't have come to the Arc of Attrition, I don't know, if it wasn't a UTMB event, or maybe you would have, but in some sense it's good for the sport. I just got coffee across the road and they were really excited that people were coming to Cornwall in January from around the world.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of naysayers, but it potentially feels like it could be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like, you know, I think the way that they absorb races, some races, like, you know, certainly the way the conduct, the way that they do that, you know, if people want to criticize that and not do that race, great. Like, yeah. But there are literally so many races, so many events, like the Wyman 100,
yeah.
Like, you know, like is just like a local organized, like unorganized, not race, but yeah. event, you know, like you can do, there's so many things to do, right? That, and if you want the level of competition right now, that like UTMB has those, has the level of competition. So like, I don't know that it's like a pure monopoly and that there's no other alternatives, right? There are so many alternatives, yeah. right? And I think the problem with UTMB races, like I think they are very difficult to get to and they're inaccessible for a lot of people that don't have like a lot, like these are like once a year things, right?
Like expensive.
Yeah, they're expensive yeah. And the travel to get there and like the time. And so, you know, it's not something that it could be like regularly done by the vast majority of people.
Yeah.
So I think that that's where I would criticize that aspect of it. It's just inaccessible to like many people. And therefore yeah. like UTMB is inaccessible, right? Mm. The World Series event. So, you know, but I do think that there's plenty of opportunities for people to do whatever their interests them and criticize UTMB if they want, you know,
yeah.
yeah, there's plenty of places you could criticize UTMB. I think a lot of them have merit. So, yeah. yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Anything coming in on the chat? People staying quiet. If you've got a question, guys, do pop it in the chat for Joe. So you start tomorrow, you start at one and then you're heading straight back home afterwards.
Yeah, like 2 days. Yeah. Cool. So, nice. Yeah, we did all the London things, National Gallery, oh, we went cool. to the Tate Modern, yeah. you know, Tower of London. Yeah, we went all around. So nice. Saw the Book of Mormon at the London Theater.
Oh, classic.
Yeah. So that was great.
Yeah. Nice one. Yeah. Well, Joe, best of luck in the race. I'm super excited yeah, to see thanks. How you fare. And if you ever are back here in the UK, make sure you do check out Lakeland or something like that. Go yeah. run Bob Graham. Go run a fell race.
Yeah, for sure.
I always close the podcast with the same question, which is, what do you think is the most important thing when it comes to success in ultra running?
I would say probably, how do you respond to problem solving, right? Like, right. How do you respond to pressure? Like when something goes wrong, like, do you just like dig in and keep doing the wrong thing? Or, right. Or can you pivot to something that was like unanticipated or unplanned?
Yeah.
And so I think that ability to just like react, to like, and break apart the problem that's in front of you and then find a solution or an adequate solution and then move forward. Right.
Yeah.
So that the decision-making to get to that point, I think, is something that you can develop through experience and time and things going wrong. Like, I think this will be like my 10th 100-mile run.
Oh, nice.
You know, so like, you know, that's a lot of things yeah. done wrong. Right. So like, it gives me like a lot of like arrows in my quiver to like, so I think that's probably the most important. And also, of course, just like consistency over time is king. Mm-hmm. You know, just you don't need any hero workouts, you know, yeah. just like just build up the volume, the aerobic volume over time. And, you know, that will open doors.
Well, so. The ARC is a race that is renowned for throwing problems at you.
Wonderful.
So I hope you have many that you can overcome tomorrow.
Yeah. Thanks.
Nice one. Cheers, Joe.
Yeah, cheers.
All right, before the second half of this episode, just want to thank Trailskin for their continued support of Feet First. Trailskin make all-natural, high-performance skincare designed for runners by runners. What I love about Trailskin is that everything is handmade here in the UK using all-natural ingredients. I've been really enjoying the Trenchfoot Cream. This is exactly as it sounds. It is a cream that is designed to help you prevent your feet from getting too wet and all the problems that arise from that. I was crewing my friend during the ARC 100 and I saw him applying this liberally at every crew point and it really helped his feet stay intact for the duration of a very wet and very soggy 100 miler. If you want to check out Trailskin, then you can head to trailskin.com and use the code FEETFIRST20 whilst you're there. That will get you 20% off your next order of £20 or more and it will get you £5 store credit towards your second order. That is trailskin.com. Use the code FEETFIRST20. Try it, your feet and a few other bits of your body will thank you. All right, here is the second part of this episode with the legend that is Sabrina Stanley. All right, we're back. We're live. Perfect timing for Harry the dog to interrupt the scene. But you can see his tail wagging there on the edge of the screen. And we're back with Sabrina Stanley. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It is so exciting to have you on the show. I was going to say you're our first American. You're not. We just had Joe Miller. Yes. But you're our second American, first American lady. I think, you know, you're... Yeah, sure. You're someone who in some ways needs no introduction, but for a British audience, maybe beneficial to kind of set the scene as to what you've been up to for the last few years. What's the sport been? What's your introduction been to the sport?
Yeah. Like how I got into running, is that kind of, or
yeah, just, like what yeah, just tell us a bit about your running background, really.
Yeah, I started off as a road runner, just hobbyist. Heard about trail running, specifically hundreds.
Yeah.
Decided I wanted to do Leadville and knew it was a lottery.
And you got in like first time or something.
Yeah. No, I put my name in when I was 25, and I didn't know how hard it was getting the lottery. I just assumed it was hard. And thought I'd get in by the time I was 40. And so I'm like, I'm going to start building my tickets now.
Yeah.
And I got in first time. And I was not mentally prepared for that. And was working kind of like a demanding job in terms of hours and let my training slide. And I made it to mile 87, timed out.
Right.
And then I said, I'm going to dedicate everything I can to doing this right the next year. And so I luckily got in the next year as well and went back and took fourth, and then just kind of snowballed from there. I wanted to do winter race, signed up for, at the time it was Sean O'Brien, was a golden ticket race.
Where's that?
That is Malibu, Southern California.
Nice. Yeah. Nice place to run.
Yeah. And didn't really know what like golden tickets were or anything, and just wanted to do this race in February. And I took second there, got a golden ticket, and then I went to Western States, was third there, and that was my second 100. And then it just kind of like kept snowballing. It got into Hard Rock and was lucky that I've been really lucky with lotteries.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just for timeline's sake, so when was Leadville the first one?
First Leadville was 2015 when I DNF'd.
Okay, right.
And then went back 2016 and then, yeah.
Okay. So you've kind of been involved in the sport in quite a transitional time, I guess. I feel like 2016 through to now, the sport has changed a lot, particularly in America, right?
Oh, for sure.
Professionalization.
I feel like I've been in it during the transition, so I haven't noticed as much because I started with the transition. I didn't start prior to it, you know what I mean? So I feel like I was part of that wave of people entering the sport. And then I think that's like around like, I mean, I know Facebook was around before that, but like social media just really hyper accelerated it. I think as it did with like a lot of niche activities and sports and stuff.
Yeah, totally. Well, this isn't your first time racing in the UK, right?
It is not. Yeah.
You ran UTS a couple of years ago?
2023, I believe.
What drew you to that race back then?
Oh, I just am always attracted to like lots of vert and difficult terrain. And it kind of fit the bill for all of that. And it definitely delivered on it too. So it was... The bog running there was something I'd never experienced. The level of fog was something I'd never experienced. Because I'm used to like technical, you know, mountain terrain. But those other elements that added in were something special and unique. And then also it rained. It was like proper UK weather leading into it. And then after it. And then for some reason on race day, it was like 80 degrees. And it was like middle of May, beautiful, beautiful spring day.
Which, good
or bad, I just wasn't prepared for that heat. I feel like it was nice, but sometimes you wish like for the rain sometimes, and I was kind of anticipating it coming here.
Yeah, we just literally just had Joe Miller on. He ran it last year in a heat wave, and it
seems
to just attract
that. Yeah,
hot weather somehow. I don't know how. Wales is not famous for that.
Right, yeah.
Race weekend at UTS is always hot. You've raced around the world. It seems like you're drawn to... there's this kind of culture at the moment of a lot of like elite level runners very aggressively targeting certain races, where it feels like you are drawn to travel and racing in interesting and new environments. Is that accurate?
Yes. I would say that was kind of the trend for a while. And then the last however many years, excluding this past year, I've just really wanted to perfect UTMB.
Right.
And so I've been building my schedule around just continuing to go back to UTMB until I have a race that I feel like from start to finish is what I want it to be.
What does that... How would you describe, if you were to finish UTMB and say that was exactly what I wanted, is that a time, is that a place, is that just a quality?
I think
of
all of it. I think it all like comes together in one. Just to have no rough patches, which I feel like is super arrogant to say about a 100 miler. Like I want to run a 100 miler with no rough patches. So like my first year, I feel like I had a really rough patch. Well, the last 12 miles I just kind of fell apart, and that was 2023. 2024, I ran it, and I left, I'm blanking on the name, Like in between, right, the town before Valorcine, or sorry, not Valorcine, Treant, the town before Treant, like
okay.
4 or 5 miles out there, you're going up a huge climb.
Yeah.
And I just decided, I was like overheating like crazy, and I just laid down in a stream for like 5 minutes. And so, yeah, there's like little parts where I'm like, oh, if I could just take out that section, it would have been perfect. And so, and it's always just like one section. So it's not that hard to get rid of just one section, I feel like, and do it right.
And so, do you have a spot at this year's UTMB?
I do. Yeah. So I medically could not participate this past year. And so I wrote them, and they have a clause. And so they were very nice and rolled over my entry into this year. So I am registered.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the arc then. So what's the obvious question, but what's drawing you to this part of the world in January when there's lots of bogs and rain and lots of ugly trail?
So I've been running on the past few days. I don't think it's too ugly.
not ugly aesthetically, but can be tough to run.
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in Washington State, and so I'm no stranger to the rain. And I live in Colorado, and like I've been training in, I don't know, we've had an abnormally warm winter, but I've been training consistently in like 30-ish degrees, give or take, so zero Celsius.
Yeah.
And so it feels honestly like warm here. Like the moisture is a problem in itself, but the temperature I don't think will be. And so just getting used to staying warm while being wet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just like races that are viewed as difficult. And January, like there's not a lot of races out there. And so
this is true.
I've been aware of ARC for a little bit just because I search winter races and ARC is always at the top of the list. And with how my race season kind of didn't happen last year, it was a good time to jump in early season and get 100 in. I've been kind of craving one for a while. And so ARC was like top of the list, and I'm stoked to be here.
Yeah. I know you've had this health journey the past 18 months or so.
Mm-hmm.
Could you just talk us through that and I guess how it's affected your relationship with running?
Yeah. So let's see. March of last year, I was supposed to run in Argentina, and like a week before I was supposed to fly out, I got this weird hamstring injury that just popped up out of nowhere. So I got out of that, or decided not to go race there. And then I was going to race in France in the middle of May. And then just was having to go pee constantly when I was training, like every mile to half mile. And I thought I had some sort of bacterial infection. I'm like, I can't race like this. So I went to the doctor, and they found a tumor the size of, like, I don't know, a large potato or like a Nerf football on my left ovary. And that, I was told, like, I think my body, my abdomen was so tense around that tumor that that was causing like a misalignment, because the tumor's on the left side, my hamstring thing was on my right. And so I think it was just everything.
Like compensation.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then they took that out, and then they said it was, at first it was benign, then it was stage one cancer. And then they said it was in my uterus as well. And so they took that out, and then they said it was stage three. And so then we went into chemo. So I started chemo, August 1st, and then finished chemo November 14th. And I'm still currently doing immunotherapy, which I'll do. The date changes, but last I heard October 2028, and that's every six weeks. So yeah, I'll fly home, and this upcoming Tuesday after the race, I will be back in immunotherapy. And yeah, it's just been, it's been a journey. Not to use that word lightly, but, and then the way it's changed my relationship to running. It just makes you appreciate it so much, you know? Like, I think when you do it long enough and it's your job, it can turn into like, oh, I have to, like, I have to do this. Or, and like, you still enjoy it, or it's, you wouldn't do it, but it does become a job in a way. And then you realize like how much you need it just mentally.
Yeah.
Like, not, because I had a full hysterectomy on July 1st, and they took out my cervix, they took out my uterus, they took out my other ovary, they took out lymph nodes. Like, it was, I wasn't allowed to run for 4 weeks or 4 or 6 weeks. And then when I came back, they're like only like very light jogging. And then at, you know, 8 to 10 weeks, you can like start training again based on your body. And yeah, it was just not being able to run. And then I had had a surgery prior to that to get the tumor removed on my left ovary. So it's like, oh, you can't run after that. And then you get the hysterectomy, then you can't run. And so it was like, I got these like, oh, you can run for these 2 weeks and then you can't. Then you can run for these 2 weeks, then you start chemotherapy and you're allowed to run through chemotherapy if your body will allow it. And like sometimes yeah. I just couldn't. Like I thought I would go into it and I'd be like, I don't care how bad I feel, I'm still going to run. And there was, I had six sessions, and out of those six, there was two different sessions where I just didn't run. They were 3 weeks apart for those 3 weeks. Like I just couldn't get out the door. And so, yeah, you just learned that like, even your bad runs, like you're just happy to be out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Even you're coming to races, maybe not with the training block that you would want. You're just happy to be at the race.
I mean, there's a sense in which this chapter of your life is not done. This
oh, definitely not. Yeah.
Like. And yet you're here running a 100 miler.
Yeah.
which is bonkers. I mean, is this largely a let's see how things go where I'm at race? Or are you sort of thinking, no, I want to run this race competitively?
Both, I think. Right. I think just my nature is to not show up to a race unless I think I'm going to win it. Like, I'm not going to travel all the way here with just like a maybe, maybe not attitude. But at the same time, I think I'd be setting myself up for like severe disappointment to say I'm going to win or nothing.
Sure.
So if things are going south in the race or something, I think I'm in a much better place to be like, okay, this is where I'm at and I'm still going to finish, as opposed to previous races where I'm like, this is bullshit. I should be winning, you know, like what's happening. Like, I think I'm very aware of where my body's at right now and where my training has been. And it's not where it has been in the past.
Sure. Yeah. And how much of that, is it tricky to gauge the extent to which that is related to the health journey you've been on, or just a function of, as an athlete, you know, everyone is aging and things change as you go. How much of that has, there's that thing of like, don't chalk up to your health anything that isn't, right? Like,
try and maintain
that distinction between you and the disease, as it were. I mean, has that been something you've had to navigate, like, you progress?
No, not until this question. I mean, honestly, before that question, I would have said it's 100% health related.
Right.
100%. Right. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. Yeah, it was just such a curveball. And I mean, chemo just does a lot to your body.
Yeah.
Like, my thyroid was not functioning properly. It was getting like low numbers. And then, like, your immune system is weak, so like I got COVID on top of it, and like you're just so fatigued, and
yeah,
I think mentally it changes too, because like it's almost like there's this like haze around you, like that you can't, it's just, it affects you in so many ways that I think aren't obvious. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I'm fine now, but like, you know, a month ago or 2 months ago, we could be sitting here talking and we could be having the same conversation, and they're in my mind, it's just like a little fuzzy, you know?
Yeah.
And then on top of all that, like, cause I had the hysterectomy, I'm going through menopause, which also causes brain fog and causes heat flashes. And then it's like, what is happening because of the chemo and what's happening because you're in menopause now at 35. And so, yeah, I mean, I think I am attributing 99.9% of it to what I've been through in the past year.
100%. And what's the longest run you've been able to get out and do in the training in preparation for this?
I got like 30.5 miles, so just under a 50K. I've done that a handful of times with 6,000 feet of gain.
Right.
And if I'm being totally transparent, those runs were at a very runnable incline.
Okay.
Outside? So, yeah. So there's like we get snow in the winter, so there's this road that they plow, and so it's like a dirt road with like compressed snow or mud. Mm-hmm. And it's like 1500 feet up, 3 miles, and then 3 miles down in that loss, and so I just do laps.
Wow.
And those have been my long runs.
Right. And you felt good?
Yeah. I feel good about it. Nice. I think without those two runs, I don't know if I'd be here, but I feel like I've had, you know, a handful of like 4 to 6 hours on feet in different weeks and stuff. So, or like different days. So I feel good about it.
Exciting. And have you had much of a chance to check out your competition, as it were, or have a...
I mean, I'm vaguely aware of like the top five females, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel good.
Yeah. Nice. One thing I wanted to ask about is you live in Colorado, right?
Yes.
In Silverton?
I actually just moved recently. So I'm back in Steamboat Springs.
Steamboat Springs, right. Yeah. But still, that's a snowy place. It's a cold place.
Yeah, it's a little bit lower elevation than Silverton, a little bit less technical.
Right.
I think suits this course better than Silverton would.
I feel like a lot of British runners who, you know, follow races like Hard Rock and
things,
maybe dream of Colorado as the sort of city on the hill, the amazing place to live. What's the reality of living there, particularly in the winter months? Is it what's it like as an athlete, you know, finding the places to run and things?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on where you are, and I think wherever you are, you find your routes. You're definitely not trail running at all. Okay. Like, it's 100% road running, and you're praying that you can have a road with incline that's plowed.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes when you get big storms, it's not going to be plowed for a day or two.
Right.
And then you're dealing with a little bit of traffic too. Yeah, I think the summer months make the winter months worth it.
Yeah.
This year, like I said, has been I think it's the warmest winter on record for us.
Right.
But typically, you know, I'm on the treadmill a lot more frequently than I have been this year.
Right.
So yeah, trail running isn't a thing in the winter.
Right. And is that, so do you find yourself gravitating to other sports? I mean, is there much like Schemo or like...
Some athletes sort of do. I don't mind doing repeats on
sounds like
on
it.
Roads. I mean, maybe I should be, but I mean, I have like the equipment, but I wouldn't say I do it with any sort of frequency.
Right.
I prefer to run. And then if I'm not running, I have a sauna that I really enjoy sitting in.
Oh, nice.
A little yoga. And then, again, this year's been so weird, but I like to lift as well. And so I have other activities, but not so much outdoor activities.
Nice. Okay, cool. And can you feel the difference coming down to sea level? Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
It is a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like you feel it just in the humidity alone, you know? But yeah, I think it does have an advantage living at altitude of some...
Yeah.
Yeah, some sort.
One thing I'd love to ask you about is like professionalization in the sport.
Yeah.
Which is obviously you've been involved now for almost 10 years and seen that grow, and you are a professional athlete yourself. Where do you see that heading? Like, do you see more of that coming down the road, particularly in the States, which it feels like is maybe 5-10 years ahead of certainly the UK scene, but even the international scene? Like, where do you stand on that and its impact on the sport? You know, you're chasing events like UTMB. Mm-hmm. You're coming here to Cornwall because it's a UTMB event. So talk me through your thoughts on how that's changed over the last 10 years.
I mean, I think you can argue either side of the coin, but I think overall it's a positive. I mean, I think athletes need to be paid better, and I think bringing sponsors into the sport and these companies that have more money that are willing to shell out for these athletes. I mean, it's not easy to be a competitive trail runner of any distance, especially 100 miler. Like, you're dedicating so much time to it. And so to maintain a normal 9-to-5 and try to be a professional athlete is almost unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's companies out here that can pay you to do it full time, I think it's only going to make the sport more competitive and more respectable. And hopefully we can get like some bigger purse prizes out there.
Yeah.
But I think athletes just need to be paid better as a whole for the amount of physical effort it takes to do the sport. So I'm totally pro making it more professional.
And you're obviously sponsored by OnlyFans.
I am.
Kind of ahead of the curve potentially in that sense of being sponsored by a non-endemic running brand. Do you see more brands that are not, you know, shoe manufacturers or apparel manufacturers getting into the trail space? Do you think that's something we'll see more of?
I do. I think in the future for sure. What is it? Michaela Schifrin, if I'm saying your name correctly, who's sponsored by Barilla.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Like, what do they do? Sorry.
That's her headline sponsor. They make pasta.
Oh, nice.
They're just a big pasta company. Yeah. And like, she's like the best skier in the world. So,
right, yeah.
And it's kind of a niche sport in the same way trail running is a little bit. And so, yeah, I think that we can get these, you know, like whether it's Red Bull or it takes a bigger step into trail running. I think that only helps the sport because, like, I'm allowed to wear whatever shoe I want to race in.
Yeah.
I'm allowed to wear whatever pack I want to run in, whatever rain jacket, like socks, head to toe. I can customize my kit to whatever I want to wear to the best products that I find on the market. And I'm not locked into like be head to toe one brand.
Yeah.
And so I think that as a fan of the sport, people can look at athletes who, have sponsors like that and know that it's genuine love of whatever gear they're wearing.
Yeah. It's funny, like football obviously is a massive, or soccer here, is a massive, massive sport. And the sponsors are frequently either alcohol manufacturers, chocolate bars, whatever.
Exactly.
Gambling companies. So it's very common in other sports, but it feels like Trail is maybe just that bit behind on those things.
Yeah. What is it? Like Athletic Brewing, I believe, like non-alcoholic beverages. Yeah. Like they stepped up.
They're American, right?
Yeah.
They're huge here now. They're massive. Yeah. Well, I was wondering about race choices and things. You mentioned UTMB and like how that's a big race for you, and you've run Western States as well. It does feel like, I was saying to the previous guest, like UTMB Western States is almost becoming like a single word, like a hyphenated word. UTMB Western States.
Yep,
it's like
they're
the races to target. I know you are pursuing the races that are right for you in terms of visibility and your professional
yes,
career.
Yeah.
Do you hope for, or would you wish for, a world where there is more variety in terms of the races that attract those audiences? Because it feels like one of the things we've really seen with the Arc, which has always been a big race in the UK and always very iconic, but has never attracted an athlete such as yourself or certainly no international athletes on your level. We're now seeing them, obviously.
I was going to say, you guys had Tom Evans.
But he's a British runner. But yes, Tom Evans probably came because of UTMB.
Amanda Basham, I would say, is...
Yes, was that last year?
But it was the same year Tom did it. So it was last year.
So last year was the first UTMB year.
But also they're doing 50Ks too, I believe. I think
50 mile.
Okay.
But yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Whereas now, because it's establishing itself as a UTMB event, and I think last year everyone saw it worked. You know, it wasn't a car crash. It wasn't terrible. People are coming over more. That's potentially mixing up the pool of races that are good for getting visibility, I suppose, and it's creating more exposure. Do you wish for a world where there are more races of that kind of tier of visibility, I suppose?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think more selection's always nice.
Yeah. Are there what races would you put on that list as like they could join that race?
Oh, I feel like I'm not as well educated on this topic as I should be.
Well, you obviously Hard Rock is one that people throw in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's the race organization's, call on if they wanted to be involved with UTMB. I mean, I don't know
I don't necessarily mean part of the series. I just wonder if there's other races that could kind of step up to creating that sense of drama and that sense of visibility that these races currently have.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, in football, you have the World Cup, but you also have the Europa League and you have like the...
For sure, there's different series.
Mm-hmm, and I wonder if we'll see more of that with World Trail Majors coming in and other things.
Yeah. I just don't feel like I am a very like one race at a time. Maybe I don't follow the sport as well as I should for...
Sure.
Yeah, I'm just like, okay, this is when I want to race. This is what I'm looking for. I scope out what is in that time frame and what matches something that would appeal to me. And then I pick that race. But I don't follow a ton of races or... I don't know. I like for me to list off races that
so
I think...
You're locked into your...
Yeah.
What you're doing.
Yeah.
Well, assuming tomorrow goes perfectly, which I'm sure it will. What's the roadmap? What's the roadmap for you to getting back to UTMB this year? Like, do you have any other races on the way?
I mean, I'm not signed up for anything, but I would love to run something. I think like Canyons possibly, or that time frame at least. But that was kind of like on my radar. Then maybe a 50K, 50 miler, like early July.
Yeah.
Maybe something more local and not UTMB related, but just to see where I'm at training wise. And then do UTMB, then maybe 100 like late November or December. That's kind of my...
Nice.
Yeah.
Sorry, we've got a...
Oh, it's all good.
Interruption.
Your wife
comes
through.
Is that?
Upstairs. Chris?
Yeah, come on in.
Yeah.
Sorry, our next guest is early. No, it's all good. He can take a seat. Oh, well, you can use the loo. That's super exciting. And so hey Chris. Watch out for the wires.
Yeah, so if you go upstairs, you'll see it. It's just the
That's super exciting. So that launch pad to UTMB. And then looking beyond that, maybe you haven't done much much thinking about what, because you're still kind of coming back from this health journey, but do you have a sense of what you want to achieve over the next phase of your career post-cancer, and I suppose moving into you know, the later stages of being pro athlete? I'm not saying you're getting aged out, but it feels like people often will transition from faster races to doing more maybe big adventures, if you look at what like Killian's doing and stuff.
Exactly.
Is that kind of thing on your mind?
Yeah, I would say it's further down the road. I would like to think I have another decade in me. I mean, I'd like to race competitively till I'm like, what, 45? I think that's pretty feasible.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly not 100 milers.
Exactly. Yeah. But I mean, TDG has always been a great fear of mine, which attracts me to it. I've crewed it, and this is such a gnarly, gnarly race. I would love to go back and do Nolan's FKT. I've done it a couple times, but I just think I have more to give on that route. And then,
that's like serious alpinism, right? That route, or is it more runnable than I think?
It's a lot of climbing, but I want to, like, you don't need to be roped up or anything like that.
Okay.
I mean, you could be cautious and wear a helmet. I think there's an argument there for that, but it's not 100% necessary. My big swan song, I like to say, would be like running across America. I think that'd be so cool. But I think that's like, you know, way, way down the road. Because I think once you do that, you're putting your body in such a hole. It'd be hard to get back out again and be competitive.
Yeah. And would that be like a, I know it's a pipe dream at the moment, but would that be like a record attempt or like a
running? No, I'd want to do it the proper way and see what I can put up for a time.
Yeah, that'd be such an adventure.
Yes.
As I'm sure tomorrow will be.
Yeah.
Best of luck in the race.
Thank you.
I think you've had a chance to recce some of it, right?
Barely. Yes. Right. I mean, I've done 3 runs. So like roughly, let's see, like I know mile like 6 through 9.
Great.
Which will be in daylight.
Yeah.
I ran what mile was that? I think, you know, like roughly around mile 30-ish.
Okay.
And then I ran around mile 80.
Right.
So
you've got some sort of tent pegs.
Kind of, yeah.
Sort of be like, oh, yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
And then we like drove trying to find aid stations just barely. And I saw like there was quite a bit, and, you know, for certain sections, road and some asphalt running. And so I saw that. And then I did an interview with Trail and Air.
Yeah.
He was kind of breaking down the course for me.
Yeah, he told you everything.
Yeah. So I'm like, okay, like, you know, trying to take mental notes.
Yeah,
so I have a general idea of what I'm getting into.
Yeah, cool. Oh, well, it'll be super interesting to see how you find it, you know, how you fare, and also just like get the takeaways from an international runner of your caliber. We've got Chris Jones just casually jumping into the pod. How you doing? We'll just wrap up here. Well, I always close the podcast with the same question, actually, which I'd love to ask you, especially given the wealth of experience that you have, which is, what do you think is the most important thing when it comes to success in ultra running?
Oh, I mean, there's a handful of like super simple ones, or they sound simple when you say them, but when you think you're done, you're not done. Like, your body has so much more to give. And then just never, ever stop eating. Like, you just have to keep eating.
Put that on a greetings card.
Yes.
Nice. Well, Sabrina Stanley, thanks so much, and best of luck tomorrow.
Thank you so much.